Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. La ta 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 ti 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 ta tu 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 tu. And Particle Bill. Fantastic lyrics, I know that. Come sit upon my knee, honey. We'll talk about the way things are. We'll really talk about the way things are, baby. Oh, I'm Popeye the Sailor. You know all that, too? There's so much I'd love to show you. Just, come, I will open the great vast curtains of experience into the big enormous room of life. You know, the enormous room that E.E. Cummings wrote about. Using all those small letters. You know, whatever. Yes, that's right. I knew you'd like it, didn't you? Popeye the Sailor Man. And Popeye the Sailor Man. You have a fantastic taste tonight for a can of spinach. It's like looking up from the bottom of a gigantic, moldy, fungus-laden aquarium. And here you are, struggling down among those plastic seaweeds. Here you are, a catfish in the world of angelfish. Flumming around down there, you're a bottom feeder. All your life a scavenger, a bottom feeder. Look at the way the light catches those flickering, tiny ripples way at the top of the aquarium there, and you can't even... I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. If he's gonna hang on to them oars, you gotta start putting your back into it, baby. If he's gonna hang on to them oars, you're gonna have to start putting your back into it, baby. Now, I tell you what I'm gonna do. You've been probably wondering what I'm gonna do. And it's a good thing to wonder, because I got things I was gonna do. And I'll tell you what I'm gonna do, friends. I'm gonna give you a chance at long last to earn yourself a fantastic prize. All you got to do is take hold of these six small plastic balls. Throw them, give them a twist of the wrist there. And each one of them, each one earns a prize. Each one goes into a hole, and each one has a number. And each number adds up to a total that will win you a prize, and everybody wins in this game. So, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it possible for you to have happiness and success and joy that you have never even understood before and won't ever understand. Because we're laying it on you here. Come on, boys. I know just how you feel. Did I ever tell you about the time I'm standing up there on that stage? 2,000 people sitting down there in the audience all watching. And all of a sudden, without any warning, I suddenly began to have the sneaking suspicion that my fly was open. And there I'm standing there, see, looking down at all them people. And my God, there's only one thing to do. Boom, pop, So tonight we'd like to introduce you to life in the confetti factory. It says it's the town where Whoopi was invented. Hold it there. How much I can say about it, except to say that we're going to face it.
I don't know what it is. People go through cycles here or something like that. It's hard to determine what the cycles are. There's mysterious things happening. And today, I was walking along 6th Avenue. This is the first time I actually heard something like this since I was a kid. I'm walking along 6th Avenue. Now, you know, down there in the 20s, and all these buildings are down there, and there's a lot of traffic and stuff, and a lot of horns blowing and stuff. And I'm walking along 6th Avenue, you see. And it's a tremendous action today. It's at the end of the week. It's really, really traffic. Everything is blowing and honking. And I'm up to my knees in cigar butts and stuff. When all of a sudden, I hear, mingled with all these sounds of horns and people yelling and hollering and guys pushing carts and buses. You know, the buses make fantastic sounds here in New York. If you haven't heard a New York bus, friends, you don't know what it's like, blowing all that smoke and jazz in your face when it goes by you. And, the whole thing is going on. All of a sudden, I hear this sound that's mingled with the action down there. And it's a blood-curdling sound. It's roughly a sound like, ah! Woo! I figure, my God, somebody's getting murdered right here on 6th Avenue, right in broad daylight. My God almighty, what am I going to do? Well, I hear another yell like that, and I start looking around, and the direction from whence it is coming. I'm looking around, see, and I hear it again. It's drifting out of this building. Well, and that's the last scream I'm going to do. You're okay. See, you don't have to worry about the gain in there, see. Going to blow this old turkey right off the air any minute now, which is all right with me for a while. I just like to sit here and, pop peanuts, and that's all. But anyway, I hear this yelling. Life in Manhattan can be exciting, And what happens with most people in Manhattan when they hear a distant sound of a scream? They start walking fast. Either that or sometimes they even break into a dead run away from where the scream is coming from, usually. Well, I look around trying to figure out where the scream is coming from. I keep hearing it. And then I see it. Above this little store on 6th Avenue, in gold leaf on three very grimy windows, it says dentist. And then I hear another faint scream. Another faint scream, and I know now it's coming out of that dentist office. Now, I want to tell you, I have not thought about anything like that in a long time. But I wonder how many people sitting out there tonight. They're divided into two groups, I think, in this. There's the dentist haters. And then there's the people, who just go. I mean, I've always been impressed by people who just go to the dentist as if they're, going down to the garage to get the grease job on a car. Or they're going down to buy a shirt or something. I've heard people say, I'm going down to the dentist with absolutely no quivering lip. I mean, no, bursting into tears. No emotion. I've known those people. It's hard to believe it, but I've known people who do not fear the dentist. I've known them. Well, it's true. Those people probably have other hang-ups which don't surface often, like a basic masochism. Well, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to warn you before we go any further. I'm going to warn you that the story which I'm about to tell is not necessarily in the best of taste, but it does deal with life. And it is not the story about the time I collected teeth, and that, if that's what you're interested in. No, because the last time I told a story about this hobby that me and Schwartz and Flick had for a while when I was a kid. You mean you haven't heard the story? Well, I'm not going to tell it to you. But, you know, there's all kinds of hobbies people have, you know, some people. The collecting urge in man is shared by only a very few tiny group of fellow creatures in the entire animal kingdom. The jackdaw principle. You know what is it, jackdaw syndrome? That means, you know, the urge to collect things. Some guys have the urge to collect bottle caps. I know one guy that collected beer bottles. I met this guy. He was on my, in fact, he used them on the TV show I did. Yeah, he had over 3,258 beer bottles. Now, he collected all kinds of beer. Yeah, he did. And he just collected hundreds of beer bottles, thousands, actually. He had over almost 4,000 at the time on shelves. Now, I don't know whether you've ever seen 4,000 beer bottles in one room. That's a hell of a lot of beer bottles. In fact, all the people had to move out long ago. And so he had plenty of room for the beer bottles, and he was moving it to the next room. He had some down in the basement. He had the, you know, this is the jackdaw syndrome. Man has an urge to collect stuff, right? Well, I'm not going to tell you the story, except to briefly mention that one time me and Schwartz and Flick were coming home, you know, down the alley, coming home from school, and we had this, you know, this little bunch of office buildings. You know, there's a building and loan company and a little two-bit bank and a pool room. You know, there's a little, you know, that little clump of buildings like you always see in your neighborhood there. And there were about five dentists that had offices in this little bunch of buildings, little office buildings. And one day we're coming home from school and we discovered that the back of this office, these dentists throw away all this great stuff. You know, when you go to the dentist, you know that big white thing he's got that he steps his foot on there when he drops pieces of cotton into it, you know? He just, after he's pulled the cotton out of your ear where the blood is squirting out or whatever it is, he drops it into this white can. You notice that with the plastic bag and all that? Well, you'd be surprised. He throws that out just like garbage. See, it winds up in back of his place where the garbage man comes and picks it up. We'd be surprised what's in there. We began to find, you know, great teeth. He'd thrown out all these fantastic teeth. Well, so we developed this little hobby of collecting teeth. I kept mine in a Prince Albert can. He's, you know, used teeth. You know, the ones with the great big decayed marks on the side there with the big fantastic roots. Oh, listen, I had one that had about 12 roots hanging out of the bottom. Yeah, and one side of it was rotted away completely, see. And obviously, when they pulled the tooth out of this guy, it was, you know, it was like just pulling the skeleton right out of his body, you know. It had 12 or 15 big roots hanging down there, and I could just see the moment when they pulled his tooth out of this guy. It was, you know, up it came, you know, popping out and crunching. Well, I told you it was going to be in bad taste. So nevertheless, I won't pursue this any further, but we collected these teeth, and I kept them under my bed in a Prince Albert can, you know, tobacco can with my hockey stick and my fielder's mitt and all that stuff. I had these teeth, and one night my mother cleaned out the bottom of the bed there when I was away, and she found my can of teeth, my Prince Albert can, and she opened it up, and of course all these rotten teeth fell out, and it just didn't set well. I'll just warn you that she called the dentist, by the way. She knew that she says, you know, you come on down and get your teeth. My son's got your teeth under his bed. Well, now, I didn't want to tell you that story, and I didn't tell you that story. I just outlined it. I sketched it, because the true richness of that story is enough to make you throw up. Ooh. Due to the overwhelming public opinion, I'm going to do something tonight, which I have kind of been putting off because of certain eclectic and, I might also add, certain aesthetic reasons. You know, mind an aesthetic reason now and again, along with your peanut butter. We might as well do it. We have been, in fact, the public demand has been overwhelming. There has been a demand for me to sing, once again, the Sheik of Araby. Yeah, all together now. Yeah. Oh, I'm the Sheik of Araby. Your love
belongs to me. At night, when you're asleep, into your tent I'll creep, 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 creep. The stars above, ba-ba-da-doo. The lights are way to love, 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 love. You rule this land with me. Cause I'm the sheik of Erech. Yeah, your love, 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 loves me, yeah, me. At night when you're asleep, yeah, come on, boy, sing it. To your tent, your tent, I'm gonna creep. Oh, baby, I'm ready. Oh, you rule this land, baby, you rule it with me. Cause I'm the sheik, 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 the bear of me. All I hear is... Yeah. God. Thank you, Steeter. No, just no substitute for talent. I'm the sheik. Yeah, listen, Al, since, God. That clears the air, doesn't it? It really does. Gets the clinkers out of the nose. It's great for the sinuses. I'm the sheik. The sheik of Araby. Some of these things, you're gonna miss me, honey. Some of these days, you're going to wish the hell I was here around this joint paying the rent. But nevertheless, I'll tell you the story. Okay, I've been sort of putting it off. I'll tell you the whole story. Why I reacted to those screams today on 6th Avenue. Drifting out of a dentist's office. I hadn't heard that in a long time. See, I didn't know the people still screamed and yelled in the dentist's office. But I want to tell you a thing that I actually saw. And it traumatized me. If there's any dentists out there listening tonight, you have probably experienced something like this. I'm sure that have you ever had a dentist reminisce about great moments in the office? Well, a friend of mine, yeah, I'm telling you, a friend of mine is a really top dentist. And, he taught for a while at the University of Pennsylvania, some kind of special, oral surgery department or something like this, you know. And he's seen it all, man. I mean, he's seen everything. And the one night that John got reminiscing, you know, you've always heard of doctor humor, you know, doctors talking about great moments in the operating room. Well, very few people have ever heard of one of the most macabre forms of humor, and that's dentist humor. Well, they have some fantastic stories, and they really do. Well, anyway, I'll tell you, my favorite... See, I approach the dentist purely as a spectator. You know, I've never been a dentist. And so, I'm, you know, let's face it, I'm not a participant. I'm only a victim. So one day, I must have been about 7 or 8. We had a thing in the Warren G. Harding School. And I'm sure that they have it in your school. I did have it in your school. Do you ever have health examinations in your school? You know, when they run you through the assembly line there, and every couple of months at the Warren G. Harding School, they would line up the entire second grade or the third grade, see, and we would go down to the nurse's office, and when we would go through the line in the nurse's office, she would examine us. See, she would have these little sticks, these little flat. Little flat things. She put them on your tongue, see, she lay it on your... Whoa. Well, I'll never forget the time Helen Weathers threw up all over the nurse. She just, you know, what happened was, of course, it was Helen Weathers, a little fat girl anyway. You know, she was the kind that used to bring 7 peanut butter sandwiches to school, along with, you know, a little can full of olives and, you know, the whole bit, see. And we had our examination one day right after lunch, which was a terrible mistake. Have you ever had that experience when somebody depresses your tongue and you feel like any minute now your socks are going to come right up? Well, Helen Weathers did, all over the nurse, who was a very nice lady, you know, wore these crinkly white uniforms, and they heard the big uproar and Helen Weathers gushing all over the place. Well, that wasn't the subject of the story, but that we're standing in line, and I'm back with the S's, see, me and Schwartz, and, you know, all of us back there, Zinsmeister and Chester Wisniewski, and we're all stand around the back. We used to, you know what happens when you're in line, when you're a kid, and you stand back, we're hitting each other on the arm and yelling, and Miss Shields was walking up and down, keeping order, and we're edging forward. Now, I had never had anything ever happen like this before in an examination. See, examinations were something I always passed, and they were inching forward, and they would weigh us. They would weigh you first. Then they would measure you. You had this little thing. They'd put the thing on the top, you know, on the top of your head. How long has it been since anyone's laid one of those on the top of your head to find out you're 3 feet, 7.5 inches tall? You know, they laid a thing up there. And, you know, yeah, well, they never did that much. They, you know, examine to see whether you got little visitors growing in your hair, which did occur, by the way. There was one fantastic episode that happened in third grade. I'll never forget. It spread from the front of the room back. And by the end of, I'd say, about the third or fourth week in school, there wasn't a single one of us that did not have visitors of one kind or another. I'm sitting in the back then. There's this girl named Dolores Smith sitting right in front of me. You know, I'm back in the S's there. And Dolores was kind of a pretty girl. She's blonde, you know, and I'm sitting right back of her. And I'm staring at her head, because there's something seems to be moving. And it was moving. They were all working. You know, they have whole little colonies. They were working, you know, some were carrying little, you know, hods of bricks, and others were carrying mortar. They were building a whole little establishment there in the back of her neck. Well, it was, you know, this is all part of the health situation that is visited upon the pre-adolescent child. So we're standing in line in this fateful day, and They're you know, looking in the ears. They have one of these things, like it looks like a funnel. They stick it in your ear, and they turn on a light, and they look in your ears. See, I always wonder what they saw in there, you know? Looking at, you know, the head, you see all these little pictures running around in your head there, or, you know, little bells or plumbing or whatever it is they look at. So she sticks the horn in my ear, looks in my ear. And we had a school doctor. And now I am moved on to the doctor, see? And the doctor, I remember he's sort of a big gray-haired guy, and he had this vest. And it had a gold thing across the front. And little did I realize that I was about to, you know, step into one of the big moments of my life. And the doctor starts looking at me, and he peers in my mouth and says, "Say ah." And then he says, "Here, let me take a look here." And he's looking down. He says, "Give me the clipboard, please," to the nurse. And he writes something on a clipboard. He says, "All right, next, please." And along comes Schwartz. Schwartz was next. See, so he's starting looking at Schwartz. Well, I get to the end of the line, and we go back to the classroom. Everything's cool. I figure, you know, that's just one of those days. And at the end of the day, Miss Shields gives me a note. Well, there was about 5 other kids got notes, too. She says, "Don't open this and take this home, please." Yeah, you know, I figured it was for the penny supper. They wanted my mother to, you know, send some donuts or something to the penny supper. You know, that kind of stuff. So I take the note home, and I go into the kitchen. My mother's standing over the sink there and working away with the Brillo pads. I say, "Hey, Ma, I got a note from Miss Shields." She says, "Oh, let me see it." She opens it up. She says, "Oh, no, not again." She says, "Okay." That night, she tells my old man that the doctor at school has determined that I have 2 cavities in my teeth. And did you ever have a doctor tell you that you got cavities? I mean, you're a little kid, see? So my father said, "Well, take him down to the dentist." And so my mother says, "Okay." Because, you know, when you're a kid, you get cavities like every 5 minutes on the hour, every hour. You get, you know, develop more cavities. It's like pimples or something, you know? So So that's Saturday. At this point, see, I am absolutely, totally neutral about dentists. I'm neutral. As a kid, I'd never really... I've been to the dentist, but nothing ever happened to the dentist. You know, it's kind of... He was always kind of nice. He gave you something to chew on, you know, to give you a button or something. I was to the dentist today. He'd give you a little rubber ducky, you know, with a tooth sticking out of it that shows that you were at the dentist. Yeah, we had this kind of dentist there. So this Saturday, I am sitting in the ante room of the dentist. My mother's called, made this appointment, and we're sitting in there, and there's a lot of other people in the ante room, right? And we're waiting for our appointment. And there was a lady up in the front there who was the nurse or the receptionist, and everybody's sitting there. And you know that feeling when you're in the ante room of a dentist. Well, I was a kid. I was a little kid. And everybody's talking, and people are mumbling, and people are coming in and out and all that. And there were two dentists in this office, by the way. And this is significant. Two dentists in this office. And they both had, they shared the same door. In other words, the door would go into their office, and there were two offices, one to the left, one to the right. And we were going to go to the one on the left. And we're sitting there. Everything's going cool. Or at least, you know, it seemed to be. Now remember, at this point, I have no conviction one way or other about dentists. Now, I'm not a coward. I'm really not. Now, you've seen me, Lee, face various types of physical pains and one thing and another with absolute unflinching upper lip, right? Square jaw, right? Marching forward in spite of the torpedoes, right? Right? Blood streaming, right? Never complaining, right? Well, I'm sitting in this ante room with my mother. And my kid brother's come along, see, because afterwards, I have been promised that after the dentist, we will go to the movies, right? It's going to be a big Saturday. So I'm sitting in this waiting room when all of a sudden, can you give me a little echo chamber, please? A little echo chamber, please. Hello? Hello? Okay. When all of a sudden, out of this glass door, it was one of these doors that was... It was a frosted door, you know, the kind that has little diamonds cut into it, a frosted kind of door. You hear this sound. Well, everybody in the ante room sat up. I mean, you should have seen them. I could still see the scene because, man, it really traumatized me when I was a kid. I heard this fantastic scream. It's the kind of scream that they had at the horror movies. Now, how many times in your life have you ever actually heard a human being scream? You know, they scream all the time on television. They scream all the time in the movies. But in real life, very few people ever scream, and you rarely ever hear a real scream, right? Do you agree? You just don't hear screams. Well, everybody's sitting there, and the nurse in the front, she turns around and looks. Well, it was such a fantastic yell, see. It was dead silence for a minute, and then you hear this... another wild, fantastic scream, and then you hear faint thumpings. And it happened. The door crashes open, and a guy comes running out. A man wearing a white he's got a white gown. He comes running out. His eyeballs are revolving in both different directions. And he's yelling. He's, oh, I can't stand it. Oh, stop. Oh, I can't stop. He runs out and runs right past the receptionist, turns right and runs down the hall. Well, the dentist comes out from behind his office. You know, he comes running out, saying he's got about five tools in his hand. It looked like he had a giant pair of pliers in his hand, you know. Had one of these nut picks in one hand, you know, and an enormous hammer in the other, or a cold chisel or something. He comes running out. He says, where'd he go? Where'd he go? And with that, the other office opens, and the other dentist comes tearing out. He thinks somebody's getting killed, you know. And here we're all sitting there, and the two dentists, both of them wearing their white coats, rush past the receptionist, and they run down the hall. Now, this was 14 stories, this building. This guy has run in just total terror. Obviously, he had lost his cool. He not only lost his cool, he obviously was not acting the way he would act. You know, the guy flipped, see? And he's down there waiting at the elevator, and he's waiting for the elevator. And there's a bunch of people, and he's wearing this white thing. The guy's, he was holding his head. And the two dentists rush down and grab him. You know, this is very bad public relations for the dentists. And the two dentists rush down, and of course, everybody's milling around, and they're dragging this guy back, see? And they're trying to calm him down. You know, Mr. Johnson, it's going to be all right. I won't hurt you anymore. I don't want to go. Here he is. He's a grown man. You know, the kind of guy like, you know, my father. He's a grown man. When you're a little kid, you don't expect to see fathers crying and screaming and kicking their shoes off and laying under the radiator having a tantrum. Well, they dragged this guy right through the anteroom. They didn't know what to do with him, obviously. And here he is, he's sort of struggling. It's like, have you ever seen Mickey Rooney in movies called The Last Mile, you know, or The Hot Seat, or The Big House? And well, you know what happens when they bring him down that last mile. What happens, you know? Usually, you fuzz, you're not going to get, don't. Well, this guy was walking the last mile. And he walked right past all of us, see, and they had been telling us for at least an hour, every mother in that crowd, it's Saturday, you know, kid day at the dentist, well, every mother in that crowd says, you won't have it. No, he's very nice. It won't hurt. No, he'll be nice. Well, here they were dragging a grown-up man. His shoe was falling off. He was crying. And they drag him back in the office, and you could hear muffled sobs. I don't know what they gave him, some bourbon or something in the back there to calm his nerves. Well, we're sitting there. We're sitting in the office, and it is now dead silence. He is returned back in there to the electric chair, and it's absolutely quiet. 5 minutes go by, and now I'm flipping. You know, I'm a kid. All the kids in the crowd, there must have been 15 kids there, and they were all, their faces looked like, you know, the faces out of horror movies. Did you ever see a movie called the City of the Damned? You remember that movie? The Town of the Damned or something of the Damned? The City of the Damned? The Village of the Damned or something? Where the kids have got glowing eyes? Well, all us kids are sitting there staring. My kid brother now is under the seat, whimpering. He ain't even going to go to the dentist today. But he's a traumatized man all the way, see? Well, we sit there for about 5 minutes, and the door opens. And out comes this nice dentist, Dr. Brooks, and he comes out. And he's now with Mr. Johnson, they have removed the white thing from him now, and he's wearing his gray suit, and he's got a vest on. His hair is combed. You can see his eyes are red where he's been crying. And Dr. Brooks says, well, now, Mr. Johnson, he said, just take one of those tablets I gave you every 2 hours if you have any further trouble, and give us a call next Wednesday, all right? And he says, yeah, it's okay. I'll be all right. And he leaves. And Dr. Brooks stands in the doorway and says, well, now, who's next? Well, now, who's next? And my mother says, come on now, it's time now. You're next. Let's go. You're next. And I walked in. My feet were made out of this stiff stuff. I was walking in like I had little tiny stilts under me. I walked in, and Dr. Brooks says, so, let's see. What do we have here? Why, just a few little cavities. Just a few little cavities. Now, this won't hurt. That's what he told Mr. Johnson. It won't hurt. And he turned that great big light on me, right down in the eyes. And he turns to his nurse. He says, give me, let's see, pass me that over. And he has this gigantic needle full of stuff. And with that, I could just see the needle coming down towards my eyeball. It looked like he was, you know, coming right at me, his face looking down. Well, mercifully, friends, my memory blurs at that point. All I know is that today when I'm walking along 6th Avenue, I heard that long, drawn-out... That long, drawn-out scream. I know that somewhere... Somewhere it goes on and on. Those eternal bores and bits that are grinding the rottenness out of you. Ain't stopped yet. Hold it there. That's enough. I just didn't want to, you know. There's a lot of kids are going to be going to the dentist tomorrow, and I sure loused up everything, you know. Full flight, the full-blown, totally realized, unbelievably incisive imagination. Well, what are you going to do, you know? Incidentally, even turtles are affected by time. I mean, right now at this minute, the sand is blowing over the pyramids and wearing them down to a nubbin. There'll be nothing left in maybe 4 or 5 eons. And where is it all going to end? Well, that's a question that's been asked many times over and over again and will appear on the next semester's work. So get your notebooks ready, and we'll have the answers for you that time. We don't want to jump ahead in time. It'll be a lecture course, and there'll be 3 periods of laboratory work, including a workbook.